You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, April 4, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and we're recording this around 7 p.m. Eastern on Easter Sunday, about 26 hours in advance of the title game of the 2021 NCAA tournament. Tip scheduled for Monday at 9:20 Eastern. It's going to be Gonzaga versus Baylor inside Lucas Oil Stadium. The winner will become a first-time national champion. Deadleg, you monitored the press conferences earlier today while I was getting sunburned, sitting on an outdoor set for 3 hours, CBS Sports Network. Shouts to Brenda, makeup lady, for covering my stupid bald head with sunscreen. Anything interesting come out of today's press conferences?
Were you able to listen to them as you were on set or no?
Some, but we didn't carry all of them in their entirety. We had snippets here and there.
Did you hear Mark Few call me out on the press conference?
I saw somebody, I believe our buddy Dan Wolkin at USA Today, reference it, but I didn't hear it with my own ears.
Listen, I hop on these pressers just to see what they're saying, and I raise my hand. I figure I want to ask Mark Few, because I wasn't in the press conference last night going to the HQ set. I just wanted to ask Mark Few if he thought that the game turned in his favor, even if ever so slightly, with Suggs's block and then pass and transition to Timmy, because it felt like that in the building. So it comes to me. And, you know, sometimes when you do these Zoom sessions, the host will unmute you. You will not do that yourself. So I thought that Mark Fratto, who does a wonderful job with the NCAA, former St. John's SID, really a man about town with many different occupations around the greater New York area, he's hosting this again. So I thought he was going to do me a solid and just unmute me. I didn't want to do a thing where he unmuted me and then I muted myself and then it's like 10 seconds of silence. Well, it was about 6 seconds of silence, and then Fratto said something, and then Mark Few said, "Come on, Mr. Technology, let's go." And then I was finally unmuted. I said, "Listen, I didn't want to do this whole thing where, you know, I unintentionally muted myself." And then Mark Few said, "I'd mute you if I could," in front of who knows how many people. Just not necessary from the potential championship-winning coach a little more than 24 hours from now. As for what they said, I would say it was fairly tame. And that's been, not to get too inside baseball here, but some of these Zoom availabilities throughout the season, be it players or coaches, like there's occasionally been, I guess, because of the way that these things have to go. Like we have occasionally gotten some pretty good moments and spots where coaches have been fairly revealing because they're just speaking in front of a screen. You know, there's not an audience. But I think a lot of other times at the Final Four and in the tournament, when you've got a dais and you've got 15 to 25 to 45 media members, you know, together in a room, and there's just an energy there, you get a little bit more, but there wasn't too much. I mean, Mark Few basically spoke about what it's meant to get to this point, talked a lot about the game, and then asked about the changeover. You know, you guys played late. What's the toughest part with mentally or physically and all that stuff? I didn't find anything that was too enlightening there, and Scott Drew was a lot more of the same, but he was also asked about starting the Baylor back up when he got the job. You know, same old deal there. We did learn that Mark Few and Scott Drew have been playing pickleball together in the bubble there. Are you familiar with pickleball?
Yes, I have heard of pickleball. And coincidentally, the first time I ever heard of pickleball was in my first phone conversation with Mark Few after the pandemic hit. We were just sort of catching up, and he said, you've been playing pickleball? And I was like, I don't know what you're asking me. And he said, go on YouTube. You'll find it. He said, you probably got tennis courts near your home, right? I said, yeah, just not, you know, 5 minutes away. He said, I bet you they're already taped off for pickleball. We've been playing pickleball every day. So he's been fired. Like that was maybe about a year ago. He's been fired up about pickleball for like 12 months straight. I'm embarrassed to say I've never played myself.
Same.
I did like during the pandemic, I increased golf, started playing tennis with my younger boys, but I never did dive into pickleball. But I know Mark's been, he's been in it for about a year now. That's his pandemic sport of choice.
Yeah, I've never done the pickleball deal, but it seems interesting. I'd love to know if actually, and they will never reveal this, but maybe a few months from now, a few years from now, will Mark Few and Scott Drew sneak out and just steal a little one-on-one pickleball game before the national championship? You know, some of these coaches throughout college basketball, no matter if they're not in the same league, different parts of the country, for whatever reason, some of them have, you might be surprised to learn some of the coaches have really, really strong friendships. And I wonder if they might steal in a pickleball game. But no, I have never.
Like,
never
Rocky
played.
And Apollo. At the end of Rocky III.
Exactly. Exactly.
They just sort of get in. Empty gym. Just Rocky and Apollo. Just getting it on. Just going a few rounds to see what's what. You anticipate after tomorrow night's championship game, no matter who wins or loses, there's Mark and Scott back at the pickleball courts getting in a game at 2 a.m.
Or maybe tonight, 11 a.m., sneak out, get out of a film session for 10 minutes. These guys are so loose, it wouldn't surprise me. They probably aren't doing it, but I couldn't help but notice. By the way, this is first time in men's college basketball title game history. Someone sent this out. I would love to credit you, but I saw it on a whim. It's the first time the names of the last coaches rhyme. Few Drew. Never had it before. Who would have thought?
You mean to tell me Bill Henderson wasn't coaching against Ronnie Renderson back in 1948?
That's right. Hasn't happened.
That's unfortunate. That's a missed opportunity. They should have made Adolph Rupp change his name in 1948 to Adolph Renderson. And then we'd have had Adolph Renderson against Bill Henderson for all the marbles.
Yeah, what's that mean, by the way, all the marbles?
Do we? I have no idea.
Yeah, just one of those things we say. Who knows? All the marbles.
I only say it when I'm trying to be goofy. The marbles.
I'm feeling a little goofy today, just so you know. We were up way late.
I'm ready.
I know. It's a weird, but it's a weird Sunday. Normally the Final Four Sunday, that's when a lot of people get after it. Let's be real here. There's not a game until 9 o'clock the next night. This is a weird one though. We're just chilling here together, gonna do an HQ hit. But I know you just about have a couple, only two more days, buddy. Then we put the season behind us.
I really do think being in your room alone, nonstop, like it takes a toll. Like it messes with you a little bit. Like we are not like they don't have police outside our doors or anything like that. But we are. We have been strongly advised to you stay at a restaurants, you stay at a bar, you stay out of the streets unless you're going for a walk. And what that leads to is like an entire crew of people. You know, we walk to set and then we do a television show and then we leave set and we all walk back together to the same hotel and we just go to our rooms. I mean, like everybody's like, so how you doing on liquor in your room? You know, like people going to the liquor, like there's one person who worked with us who was like, yeah, I had to call the liquor store yesterday to make sure that they were going to be open on Sunday so that I didn't get stuck in my room all night without a bottle, I think this is A, lonely, and B, creating possible drinking problems. So it's just sort of, it's weird to be at the Final Four and be isolated because, now it's a little more productive. Like I've gotten more work done, in non-pandemic years, we'd be trying to rush through this so that we could meet four people for dinner. And then who knows what happens after that, but then whatever happens after that lasts until everything closes. And then you wake up whenever you wake up on Monday morning or, sometimes Monday afternoon. This is more relaxing, less taxing on the body, but it's a weird feeling. Like the national championship game's tomorrow. And, when I get done with this, you and I will go do CBS Sports HQ. And then, I don't know what your plans are, but I'm coming back to sit in the same room again all night long.
That sounds like a plan to me. You want to preview this game?
Yeah, we'll get into the actual matchup next, I think. But first, let me remind you that it is Masters Week. Butler Cabin, Green Jackets, Azaleas, DJ Brooks, Rory, Red Hot, Jordan Spieth. As usual, I can't wait to see Augusta National on my screen, and CBS Sports obviously is your home for that. Whether you're looking to watch on the range, featured groups, Amen Corner, holes 15 and 16, it's all available on CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports mobile app, and Paramount Plus. Even the CBS broadcast this weekend, it'll be available online. So make sure you're streaming the best golfers in the world and the best tournament in the world. It's Masters Week in April for the first time since 2019, and the best way to follow it is via CBS Sports. All right, Gonzaga versus Baylor for the national title. all the marbles. Preseason number one against preseason number two. Two number one seeds. One team 31-0. The other team 27-2. Combined 58-2. Gonzaga looked vulnerable on Saturday against UCLA. Baylor looked overwhelming on Saturday against Houston. Did anything that happened Saturday make you rethink how you believe this game is going to go down?
Yes. Had Baylor had more issues with Houston, I would have picked Gonzaga to win and cover. But I had to think a little bit harder about that. We'll get to our picks at the end of the podcast. There's no denying that, at least going into this game, there is more doubt about how the game will play out than we otherwise would have thought, because the results and the way those two games played out, they were flipped. We thought that Gonzaga was going to be able to run away from UCLA, biggest favorite in a national semifinal since 85. It's not how it went down. We thought Houston might have a chance at keeping that game low scoring and getting inside that number, if not beating Baylor. Not exactly how it went down at all. So because of how good Baylor looked, and I actually thought, to kind of pluck a baseball term, it was almost like it was an 8-2 game in the fifth inning and the manager just pulled the pitcher because what's the point? You know, the perfect game's gone. You got a comfortable lead. Like, there's no reason in this modern era of baseball, as you can speak to just, you know, use an arm for another 20, 30, 35 pitches there. So I thought Baylor just knew that Houston was not going to be able to rally and come back from 25 down at halftime, and it just was able to keep them at arm's length the entire second half. Whereas Gonzaga, UCLA doing what it did, and Gonzaga winning on an amazing shot, but a little bit of a lucky shot, let's be honest with that. I do think that the range of outcomes for this game are a bit more varied than I would have anticipated like 4 or 5 days ago. And by that, I mean, I'll just tell you, after watching these teams do what they did, and I don't know how much of it will carry over to the next game, if at all, but if someone, you know, were to knock on my door and say, hey, I'm from 2 days in the future, I'd be like, whoa.
Whoa. I'd be like, what are you doing? What are you doing at my door?
What are you doing here right now if you've got the ability to move through time? What is going on? But I'm going to tell you, I'm 2 days to the future. And I'll be like, listen, I'm masked up. We can just talk to the door right now. But I'm going to tell you, Gonzaga's going to lose Monday night. Okay? And when they lose, Baylor's going to win by 8 points. I just believe that. I believe that is something that is now under consideration and on the table. It's not the most likely outcome, but I don't think if Baylor's going to win, the only way it's going to be able to do it is to try and run a foot race with Gonzaga and then have to get lucky down the stretch and maybe it wins by 3 or 4 points max. I think there is a potential way we could be talking about this game and we're talking about Baylor winning and salting it away with foul shots, coming close to a double-digit win. I think that's a possibility. I'm not saying it's likely. It's not my pick, but I can see it happening.
I had reached the point over the past month where I was sort of like, Gonzaga is beatable, but nobody's going to beat them. And if somebody were to beat them, it would only be because they didn't show up. You know, like they played a C-level game and somebody else who is good played an A-level game. And it takes something like that for the Zags to take a loss. The one exception that I had tossed out several times on this podcast was Alabama. And the reason was because of the style of play. Because, like, if Alabama just wants to launch 35 threes and make 17 of them, then I don't care whether you're Gonzaga, Baylor, or anybody else, you got real problems. Then, of course, Alabama loses earlier than most expected. And so they're out of Gonzaga's path. And I sort of reverted, you know, to my initial thought. I no longer believe that. I think Baylor is good enough to beat them straight up. Like, I don't think Baylor needs Gonzaga to play poorly for Baylor to win. I think if Baylor plays really well, it is good enough at enough different things that it could just win we could be talking late Monday night and go, man, Baylor played really well. Gonzaga played really well. And Baylor just got him at the end. That's not something I would have assumed was in the cards, a month ago. But I do think it's in the cards now, and especially after what we watched Saturday, because it was remarkable. As you pointed out, those games went the exact opposite way, not just the way we thought, but the way most people thought. You know, Baylor or Houston was supposed to be a fist fight. And I thought Baylor would win, but I thought it would be close. I think my quote was, we'll be at the under four and the game will be undetermined. The game was determined by halftime, all right? And then I was exactly the opposite. Most people were on Gonzaga-UCLA. Like I asked you, what do you think's more likely? Gonzaga wins by 25 or UCLA wins by one? And you said Gonzaga wins by 25. And I said, yeah, that's right. And then Gonzaga needed overtime to get past UCLA. A banked in 35 to 40 footer is the way that they escaped that uneasy situation. So I you know, and I don't think any of us looked at Gonzaga last night and said they played poorly. I don't, you know, they certainly had some lapses on defense, but like Drew Timmy showed up. Jalen Suggs played. Kispert wasn't great, but like that was not a C-level performance from Gonzaga on Saturday night against UCLA. It certainly wasn't an A, but I don't think it was like, oh my God, the Zags played terrible, and that's how UCLA was in the game with a chance to beat them. Like the Zags played okay, and UCLA an 11 seed. Yes, with the greatest coach in UCLA history on the sideline, but still an 11 seed had an opportunity to knock them off. I guess I'd bottom line it that way. If Gonzaga can play pretty good and still be vulnerable to an 11 seed, then they can play pretty good and lose to a Baylor team that looked awesome on Saturday. And the recipe to do it, at least on the offensive end, like think about how Baylor pulled away from Houston in that first half. I mean, it's a lot of different things. You know, they didn't let Houston score. That's a great place to start. Quentin Grimes had zero. That's a great place to start. They took 15 threes. Baylor took 15 threes in the first half. And they only finished with 24, but again, the game was decided. But I think I would maybe start there. Baylor is the best three-point shooting team in the country. Top five scorers all shooting at least 39% from three-point range. I might want to shoot more than I normally do because you're going to have to score to beat Gonzaga. And the best way to get into the 80s, maybe even the 90s, is probably, you know, hey, we're shooting 42% from three-point range. Instead of taking 24, let's take 30. Let's take 30 and see what happens. I would, you know, at this point, I'm not going to game plan for Scott Drew. I think he and his staff got this stuff figured out. But I would be more interested in Baylor upsetting the Zags if they were committed to, we know we've got to score a lot of points here. Let's try to get a lot of them from the three-point line.
Here's a few things to keep an eye on, keep in the front of your mind as you watch this game play out as we gear up toward Monday night. Gonzaga's the number one rated offensive team in college basketball, according to KenPom, at 127.2 offensive rating. That means for every 100 possessions, its adjusted efficiency would be 127 points. That's awesome. It's also the highest scoring team in college basketball, just points per game at a tick over 90, 91 that is. Baylor is the number two team in offensive efficiency. So, you know, 1-2 right there, but the way they do it is different. Baylor is the number one three-point shooting team, now at 41.2% from three-point range. Gonzaga, of course, number one two-point shooting team and the best in the history of college basketball, 63.9%. I don't think it's even going to be capable, even if it has an off night. I think it's going to hold that record no matter what happens here, win or lose. If you're wondering how those two teams rank in the other shot, if you will, like Gonzaga's the best two-point shooting team. How does it do from three? It's good. It's not great. 37% ranks 42nd in the country. And Baylor, how does it do from two-point range? It's good. Not great. 53.5%, that's 44th in the country. So the two-point battle versus three-point battle will be interesting, particularly because, as we mentioned before when we talked Baylor-Houston, Baylor is still an elite top five, top six offensive rebounding team in college basketball. So even if it doesn't shoot well inside the three-point line or outside of it, will it be able to get a lot of second-chance opportunities? We'll see. Gonzaga is a fairly good defensive rebounding team. It ranks top 20 in college basketball. I do think we've got a good shot at a pretty close game because history suggests that we will. This is the ninth time that one seeds are meeting in a title game. They've only been seeding since 79. So if you really went back, you know, to the 60s and 50s, there have been other instances where clearly two teams on a one seed level have met in a title game. We just didn't have seeds then, GP. But since seeding began in 79, we've had nine meetings. This is the ninth one. The previous eight, all eight of them were decided by single digits, and the average margin in those games was 5.3 points. That's, I mean, you got to be feeling good about that. Are you with me that we do think that this game, the most likely outcome is 6 points one way or the other? I would put that number on it kind of arbitrarily, but I think two possessions max is how this game will get decided. Would you agree?
Not 100%. I mean, don't ever forget, this is a Gonzaga team that is now 31-0, still has 29 double-digit wins.
Mm-hmm.
We have watched them run really good teams off the court. Most recently, you know, USC. USC is a top 10 KenPom team that had a top 10 defense. And they just beat the brakes off of the Trojans, won the game by 19 points. So I don't want to get caught up in recency bias. You know, it was just 3 days ago where I was like, I don't know if Gonzaga is going to get pushed at all in this tournament. And that was including the possibility that they would play Baylor in the national title game. And so I know what we just saw was the Zag struggle with 11-seeded UCLA. But if you can go back one more game, what we saw is them completely overwhelm a USC team that is currently 6th at KenPom, 14th in adjusted offensive efficiency, and 5th in adjusted defensive efficiency. If you can beat that team by 19, then you can run away from Baylor as well. I guess I would say this. I do not think the Zags will run away from Baylor and that we'll be watching the final 10 minutes of a blowout. I don't believe that's how this is going to go. But do I think it's possible? Yeah, I definitely think it's possible. The only thing I don't think is possible is Baylor just running away from Gonzaga because Gonzaga scores too much.
All right, so you're basically saying, you know, 1% or less chance that Baylor wins by 12 or more, basically. Or
to I'd be surprised. I mean, we've just seen nothing to make us think that's going to happen all season with Gonzaga. Like, they just – I think you can slow them down, and I think you can score on them, but I don't think you can stop them from scoring. Like, to beat them by double digits, you probably got to get to 90 to do something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that's excessive. They're going to score with you. They're not unbeatable, but I don't think you can run away from them because they get too many easy buckets. And I think even though Baylor is terrific, you know, the Gonzaga is still going to score on Baylor. You have to score with them. And I think they can score with them, but I don't know that you can run away from them because they're not going to stop scoring.
Yeah, we're just lucky to get this game. I mean, it's hard to argue that you can have much more on the line in a championship game. First of all, we've never gone 2 years between a title game in college basketball like this. So you've got that as backdrop. It's the 5th time in history the top two teams in the preseason poll are going to meet in the championship game, and it's the first time in 2 decades that's happened. As mentioned on our overnight pod, it's also the first time since 2005 that we've actually had the two teams that the committee, when it built the bracket, said, here are the two teams that are the best and have the best resume that we think, if the tournament plays out, they should meet for the title. This bracket doesn't allow for these things that often. We're going to get that on Monday, first time in 16 years. And then how about this? Gonzaga and Baylor have a combined 2 losses. That's the fewest ever, tied with the 57 title game and the 66 title game, for the fewest losses entering into the championship game. And if you want to look at just achievement within the context of a season, Parrish, their combined record and winning percentage, which is 96.967, it's the highest combined winning percentage in a national championship game in men's college basketball history. Like, there's been a lot of talk about, like, oh, Gonzaga Baylor, they're finally going to do it. They were going to play in December. Yeah, but, like, this game is the game that we deserve, and it really does feel extremely significant for how rare it actually is when you look at the accomplishments of these teams and then take into account the rigors of the pandemic and how tough it was on every single team that tried to go through all this. The fact that Gonzaga and Baylor have continue to win despite that. We saw a little bit of this with other sports in the pandemic as well. I don't know if there's any sort of correlation with that, but to me, it just stands out. That I got a column up that's going up Sunday night, and it'll be on the site all day Monday. You can read. I mentioned a few of these items in there. It's magnificent to me that it is these two, and how rare it is to get these teams at this level. Considering what they've statistically achieved,
and then from a talent perspective, this is a high-end national title game. You know, right now, Jalen Suggs is a projected top 5 pick. Corey Kispert is a projected lottery pick. Davion Mitchell is a projected lottery pick. Jared Butler is a projected first-round pick. Joel Aiyi could get picked if he enters the draft. Matthew Meyer could get picked if he enters the draft. You know, as I've been spending the past few days alone in a hotel room, you know, sort of going through the top 25 and one, trying to figure out, okay, what is their roster going to look like? Who's probably going? Who's probably staying? There is a chance if a handful of these on-the-fence guys for Gonzaga and Baylor come back, we could be looking at this, some, you know, like this could be, they could be preseason number one and number two. I don't know that they are. I haven't started ranking teams yet as much as I've started gathering teams. But if you get Drew Timmy back, he's an on the fence draft guy. Get a IA back. He's an on the fence draft guy. You know, then there's no scenario where the Zags aren't awesome again. Mm-hmm. And then at Baylor, you know, if you can, I mean, clearly you're not getting Davion Mitchell back. You're not getting Jared Butler back. But, like, can you get Matthew Meyer back? And then with the rest of these guys and recruiting, like, both these teams were one seeds last season, one seeds this season, and they're going to be really good again next season. So if you are somebody who likes college basketball because of the glimpse it gives you into future NBA players, well, then this title game is just about as good as we could do as well.
Here's what speaks to Gonzaga's greatness overall, and I'll mention this anecdote, then I want to ask you a question that my column basically touches on. So Joel Ayayi has 22 points against UCLA. In the entire context of the game, Suggs is the star, but Ayayi was probably the most consistent player. Like, Suggs had his moments, don't get me wrong. He finished with 16 points and was, what, 6 of 12 from the field. He was really good, 5.6 dimes. It was basically between Ayayi and Suggs. That was a career high for Ayayi, who, by the way, has a triple-double to his name earlier this season. It's the only one in Gonzaga's history, and he's their fourth best player. I do think he's an NBA player, and I think Andrew Nembhard is going to eventually be an NBA player. I think we will look up in 5 years and see that the starting five for Gonzaga this season are all in the league. I think they're all headed there, and it speaks to how good they are, which makes me want to ask you this.
Well, let me stop here for a second. Okay. You bring back Nembhard, yes. Ayayi, and Timmy. Add Chet Holmgren. I mean, that's the preseason number one team, isn't it?
Probably is, yes. Probably is. That's
Timmy's the big one because he is a star in college, but not somebody who is like a guaranteed first-round pick. Drew Timmy is going to be this offseason's Ayo Dosunmu, you know, that type of guy. Like, you could go if you want, but boy, if you come back, you're the face of everything. Like, Drew Timmy comes back, he's the preseason National Player of the Year.
Corey Kispert was kind of that too. Now, he wasn't the face of everything because Luka was bigger, but Kispert would have been drafted a year ago. He came back, All-American. Oh, by the way, he's the WCC Player of the Year. It's a joke. In fact, how about this with Timmy? He's the third player in the past 25 years to go 4 straight tournament games with 20 or more points and shooting 50% or better from the field. The only other two guys to do this, did you see this? This was in the CBS Sports research package.
I don't know the answer to the question.
How about this, though? He's done this. The only other two guys to do this in the past 25 years are number one overall picks. Zion Williamson in 2019 and Blake Griffin in 2009. 4 straight tournament games, 20 or more points on 50% shooting or better. I don't know if he'll go or he'll stay, but to your point, if he does return, Gonzaga's going to have to be there. Question I want to ask you is kind of the central point of my column and more of a philosophical or your viewpoint of all this. Right now, Gonzaga is clearly the number one team in college basketball, and there's nothing Baylor can do on Monday night to jump them in KenPom's rankings. They are so far ahead in adjusted efficiency margin that even if Baylor won 85-50, Gonzaga would actually still finish the season as the number one team. And this has happened in years past. It occasionally does happen where the number one team or the number two team doesn't win the national championship. The difference in adjusted efficiency margin as we talk right now is 5.75 points. Now, that's not the only thing we should take into consideration when I'm going to ask you what I'm about to ask you. But the question and really the thesis of the column is, all right, if Gonzaga wins on Monday, it is quite obviously sports immortality. Undefeated season hasn't happened since 76. Like, that is a top three headline in sports this year, I believe, because of the significance and how rare it is to get an undefeated champion. We just don't get it other than college football, which...
And it'll be a forever thing. Like, yes. Think about how many times this season, whether it's on HQ, this podcast, or when you've typed since 1976 Indiana. Like that every time going forward, like, I don't know anything about 1976 Indiana. I wasn't alive, but I've said it a million times. 1976 Indiana, you know, since 76 Indiana. Well, you know, it hadn't been done since 76. That was Indiana. They will now be that standard. people will never reference 1970. It's over for 1976 Indiana.
Well, it's not over. They're just not the most recent one. Oh, it's over for them.
Okay. It's over for them. It's over for them if the Zags win tomorrow night. We'll never talk about them again, ever. Because you know what we'll be saying? It'll be 6 years from now, and Chris Beard will have Texas undefeated. And we'll be going, the Longhorns had the chance to be the first undefeated national champion since Gonzaga in 2021. It's over for 76 Indiana.
Okay. It's over. Okay. So two things here. One, if Gonzaga does do this, considering everything it went through and statistically what we're seeing it's doing, and again, to me, I think we're going to look up and see five pros. Maybe it'll be four NBA players, but we're going to look like this team to me is going to register among the very best teams in the history of college basketball. I don't know where we're going to slot it. I'm not saying it's the very best, but yeah, there's only been eight teams ever that have finished a season undefeated, and I would put this Gonzaga team in the top five. But the question I'm more interested to ask you is if Gonzaga loses to Baylor, okay, think about what we talked about 3, 4, 5 minutes ago, how this sets up as a historic matchup considering the accomplishments of Baylor combined with Gonzaga. This is a worthy adversary, a team capable of beating Gonzaga. They've been awesome 2 years running. Like, I understand that championship games are, by their very nature and definition and existence, they are the things that declare champions. They're arbiters of a given season. But if Gonzaga loses its final game to Baylor, I'm still going to consider this one of the best college basketball teams of the past three decades. Right there with 91 Vegas, with 99 Duke, with 2015 Kentucky. A win puts Gonzaga, it cements their, you know, their deathless legacy, basically, because, again, according to you, 1976, it's done. It's over for them. But I don't think a loss really brings Gonzaga down that much in the overall landscape panorama of great teams in college basketball. Where would you agree or disagree with that statement?
I would agree with it as long as you restrict the conversation to basketball nerds who study numbers and understand KenPom and Torvik and everything else. Those people will sit around and go, man, that Gonzaga team in 2021, one of the best teams of all time. And then they'll have the numbers to back it up. And then everybody else will be like, yeah, didn't they lose in the championship game? It just won't. You cannot overstate how big of a game this is for Gonzaga. Big for Baylor too. But like Gonzaga's got a chance to you will either be an undefeated national champion, a rare undefeated national champion in college basketball, or you won't. You'll just be a team that lost. You'll be 2015 Kentucky. How often do people talk about 2015 Kentucky? You and I do it.
I think actually. That team had like six NBA players on it, and you're better than Kentucky because they lost in the Final Four. Indiana State, undefeated in 79, gets referenced plenty. It ain't over for them. I don't think that this Gonzaga team is going to turn into some sort of, by the way, I think the fact that they've gone 31-0 and murdered every team except UCLA, they will still be regarded, even among non-basketball nerds. I understand for a casual audience where you're going with this, but they're the first team since 79, so the first team in the modern era expanded tournament to make a title game. I think they'll probably be held in a little bit higher regard because of their opponent as well, but I think your bigger point, I understand, and to a certain extent, I agree with.
Here's the problem with Gonzaga that Kentucky doesn't face. Like, nobody looks at 2015 Kentucky and go, yeah, but they played nobody to get there, you know? Or, yeah, you know, that's West Coast Conference Kentucky. That Kentucky doesn't have to fight those stereotypes and those skeptics. And listen, I know it's dumb. You and I agree it's dumb to at this point dismiss or discount Gonzaga because of its league affiliation. But we also know people do it, still do it. Even when they're sitting here undefeated right now, there are some people saying, well, you know, what have they really done? Who have they really beaten? And you could lay it out for them and they'll go, well, yeah, but Kansas wasn't that good this year, but Virginia wasn't that good this year. Iowa couldn't guard anybody. What's USC? You know, like when did they even play basketball? Creighton didn't the coach almost get fired? Like people will just dismiss this. You lose to Baylor and people will say, I told you they couldn't do it. And it won't matter that it's not true. Even if they lose to Baylor, they can clearly do it. They're favored in the national title game. I mean, how about this? You go back to John Calipari before he won a national title. You know what people said about him? He can't win a national title. Oh, he can't win the big one. Never mind that he was a missed Mario Chalmers three-pointer from winning it in 2008. People grab onto these things, and they will not let go of them until they have no choice. And so, when I talked to Mark a few weeks ago, he was really, he hated, actually despised the idea that this was win the whole thing or bust for Gonzaga. And, the sort of thing I said was listen, I get it, because it's not the way he views life. It's not his approach to life. But his approach to life runs counter than the way most people who follow the sport at all, view life and approach it. Gonzaga has to win to be the it's very drastic between how this team will be remembered. Based on the outcome of this game, it will either be an all-time great undefeated national champion or that West Coast Conference program that still couldn't get it done at the end.
That's just stupid. I
acknowledged up front it's stupid. Yeah. I'm just telling you, turn on the TV Tuesday morning if Gonzaga loses and watch people talk about this. That's what you're going to hear.
I really hope you're wrong, but sometimes the discourse and this industry we have is just stupid. But yeah, my point in this, to a certain extent in the column, is no matter what happens, Gonzaga is going to be remembered because they are going to be the first team since 1976 Indiana, or they're going to be the team that made it to the title game and then lost it. There will be a certain infamy attached to that. I acknowledge that. But either way, because they've been the first to do this in more than 40 years, I don't think that we will forget them. I would hope that we don't discount what they've done, because again, opponent considered, I think, is important here. Baylor's the second best team, and I think it's good not to lose sight of that.
Yeah, no, listen, you and I are on the same page. I'm speaking for everybody else. I'm just telling you how this thing will actually go down. And when it gets into my Twitter mentions, if I reply to it at all, I'll call it stupid. I'll say, listen, Gonzaga was awesome all year, probably still is the best team in America. Baylor could beat Gonzaga tomorrow. Understand this. And then let's say they rescheduled and decided, hey, you know what? We ain't got nothing to do on Tuesday. Let's play it again. The Zags would be favored again.
Yeah.
Even if they lost on Monday night. They are a great team, a historically great team. They check every box. Elite offensively, elite defensively. They got NBA players. Everything you need to be a national champion, they got it. But I promise you, if they are not a national champion, because you know what else people say? Oh, yeah, they rolled through the West Coast Conference like they always do. Who cares? And then, yeah, they played Oklahoma in the tournament. They're missing its, second leading scorer. They played a Creighton team whose coach almost got fired talking about plantations. They beat USC. That was nice. I didn't even know USC played basketball. I guess they had that one good kid, Evan Mobley. And then, hey, before they lost to Baylor, they almost lost to an 11 seed. Whatever. So really, how great were they? That's what's coming if they don't win this game.
That's stupid. They're 14-1 in their past 15 games against Power Conference opponents, with only three of those games on their home floor. So
you're acting like you're arguing with me.
I have been
the biggest Gonzaga cheerleader for. I was on this thing way earlier than most people. I actually wrote a column before they played in the title game, that was I think the headline of the column was everything you say about Gonzaga is wrong. And I just dispelled all of these incorrect things that were attached to them. But it didn't mean they weren't attached to them. I just said, okay, here's what you say. Let me tell you why you're stupid. Here's what you say. Let me tell you why you're stupid. And so if this conversation starts after the Zags lose a title game, I will spend some time to explaining to people why it's stupid. I'm just telling you I'll have to do that because it will exist.
All right, you want to make these picks here?
I do want to make these picks here for all the marbles. We'll do them momentarily. First, though, check this out.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right, Deadleg. Gonzaga open -5. It's now down to -4.5. The total is 159.5. Where are you at?
If the total hits, here's another thing to look for with this. Highest scoring games since 1990 in the championship. UNLV Duke went to 182. Duke Arizona was 164. UCLA Arkansas and Duke Michigan, that's 95 and 92. 160 as their totals. Total seems high, but I'm actually going to go over. My pick, we can't, if we get anything close to UCLA Gonzaga, I don't care that Baylor Houston was over at halftime. If we get some, if we get something that is 85% of what UCLA Gonzaga was, then this final four, 2 out of 3, goes down among what, top 3 or 5 ever. Okay. I think it will be a competitive game. I think there will be swings. I think that unlike UCLA Gonzaga, which saw no run more than 6-0 at any point in the game, I do think you'll have Gonzaga pull off, you know, a 9-0 run or an 11-2 run, and then Baylor might counterpunch and they'll be able to pull off a 7-0 run or a 10-2 run. I do think we'll get a couple of those. Davion Mitchell versus Jalen Suggs is phenomenal. Can't wait for that. Cannot wait for Davion Mitchell versus Jalen Suggs. Davion Mitchell better go in the top 10 of this year's draft. There's no excuse. He's their best three-point shooter and their best defender. Come on now. Let's go. So I'm ready for that. Mark Vidal trying to guard Drew Timmy. Vidal's a great defender as well. Baylor's defensive approach to this game is the total selling point for me. I'm going to take Gonzaga to win. You and I both had Gonzaga back in the preseason when we made our picks for national champion. We both took Gonzaga. But I will have Baylor get inside the number. So give me Gonzaga 84, Baylor 81, and we don't have a game-winning shot situation. It's just close late, and you know, either Gonzaga hits a bucket it needs with like 35 ticks to go, or Baylor misses a shot that it could have used with like 25 seconds to go. Like, it'll be good. It'll be really good. It's just not going to be great. And Gonzaga hangs on, but Baylor's inside the number. And we walk out of there just thrilled with having those teams played in that spot and finishing up this season with the best two teams possible.
Sportsline has a projected final score of 85-81 Gonzaga.
Is it really?
KenPom has a projected final score of 85-81 Gonzaga.
You are, okay. I didn't know that. I swear I didn't know that when I said my score.
Did you say 85-81?
No, I said 84-81, but I didn't realize I was that close.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, no. So Sportsline and KenPom line up exactly the same. I'm going to go a little below that. I'm going to go 81-80 Gonzaga. Corey Kispert, game-winning jumper. Drew Timmy, most outstanding player of the Final Four.
Well, right now, going into this game, if Baylor wins, it's between Mitchell and Butler. They both had good games. They're kind of even right now, right? It'll be one of those two, probably. Going into it, if Gonzaga wins, Ayayi and Suggs were really neck and neck for who was the best player in the semifinal. And then it's Timmy. And then there's a little bit of actually a drop-off between Kispert and Nembhard. So you're saying Timmy's going to have to be good enough against Vital to overcome, because his Final Four mop, you consider the semis as well. I'll make my prediction since I'm saying Gonzaga wins. Suggs hit the winner. He'll be just good enough in this game. I sneakily think this is Corey Kispert's moment. I'm almost feeling like 25 points out of Kispert in this spot. I don't know if that would flip the voting to give him the MOP, but Suggs is just good enough here that Suggs is your MOP. And what I don't have in front of me is Melo got it. I'm just wondering how many freshmen ever have won MOP at the Final Four.
Anthony Davis. Probably one of the Duke freshmen, Jalu Okafor, maybe. I don't remember.
Was it Ja? Was it Tyus? It was Tyus, right? It was Tyus.
I just said I don't remember.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. All right. So you've got Timmy and Gonzaga winning. I've got Suggs as the mop with Gonzaga winning.
2015, Tyus Jones.
Boom.
Most outstanding player of the Final Four. Somebody give Dead Leg an extra trivia time point there, as if he needs it.
I don't need it.
Let's see how many you can remember.
You have the list?
Of course I've got the list. 2019, who was the most outstanding player?
2019 was Ty Jerome.
Incorrect. That's exactly why Tony Bennett assaulted you at the Final Four.
It's not, because that was at the Elite Eight.
So how about past two NCAA tournaments? You've been threatened with a mute button by Mark Few and physically assaulted by Tony Bennett.
I'm on a roll here.
2018 most outstanding player.
It was Kyle Guy. Was the 2019?
It was Kyle Guy. Yes. Okay. 2018
Nova. That is gotta be. I'm trying to think which other guys would have won it in 2018. I never know this because I'm on the court interviewing for HQ. I'm not voting. I never know who gets this.
This player balled out in an
DiVincenzo.
Dante DiVincenzo. Wait,
was he a freshman? No, he was a redshirt freshman, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that one.
Yeah, I think he was a redshirt freshman in that spot.
2017 most outstanding player. I predict you will not get this one.
Give me Kennedy Meeks.
Incorrect answer. Take another guess. I think you'll be wrong again.
Really? It's that?
I just barely remember this player. I mean, I remember him, obviously, but.
Theo Pinson?
Nope. Try again.
Marcus Page. Was he even on that team? Was he even on the 2017 team?
He might have been.
It's not him?
No.
It's, oh, man, I can't.
Joel Berry.
Wow.
That's a name. Like, wow. It's wild how sometimes people just disappear. Like, I haven't thought about Joel Berry perhaps since that night.
Apologies to Joel.
Yeah, my apologies, too. You're a most outstanding player. Do you know the story about, who was it? Khalid El Amin. He was working in studio with us the entire season. What year did UConn win the title with Khalid El Amin?
99.
Okay. The entire season. Like Brent Stover, Adam Zucker. He's like, welcome to Inside College Basketball. That's former NBA All-Star Wally Zerbiak. It's our insider, Gary Parrish. And the most outstanding player of the 1999 Final Four, Khalid El Amin. And Khalid would like do like a little fist, like, what's up?
Nope.
Did that all season. One day we're looking it up. I'm probably just looking at this list, the exact list I've got called up right now. And I'm like, dude, Rip Hamilton was the most outstanding player of the 1999 Final Four. Khalid was like the face of that team, but Rip Hamilton. So we were laughing, and I'm like, dude, why didn't you say something? He's like, I'm just going to roll with it. He liked it being part of his title all of a sudden.
That's amazing.
The entire year, it was in the most outstanding player, the 1999 Final Four, Khalid El Amin. He's like, nope, just 100% not true. 81-80. Gonzaga, Corey Kispert, game-winning jumper. Drew Timmy, most outstanding player, joining the long list of Joel Berry and Khalid El Amin.
Any more freshmen on that list, by the way?
Oh, let me see here. Dead Leg. Okay, we had Cal Guy, Dante DiVincenzo, Joel Berry, Ryan Archidiacono, Tyus Jones in 2015, Shabazz Napier, Luke Hancock, Anthony Davis. There's a freshman. And then I'm just going back. I do not see Carmelo.
We went
Carmelo in 2003 to Anthony Davis in 2012. Everything in between there, non-freshman. And if you start going backwards, I don't see any other freshman. That might be it.
There we go. We got to go do an HQ hit.
Hey, I figured out what all the marbles means. Okay. It literally just like is in reference to if you're playing marbles, you get all the marbles. All the marbles is directly tied to marbles. There's no. If you're looking for something more than what it appears to be on a surface level, it's literally about getting all of the marbles.
I got no interest in the marbles.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys. Once again, listen to the Iowa College Basketball Podcast. middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. They really did shut down St. Elmo. Like, you can't go there right now.
I know.
They shut it down. COVID outbreak. What in the world? But when you go to Indianapolis for the Final Four, one of the things you do, like, on the checklist is, well, hey, we're going to hit up St. Elmo, right? Hey, make a reservation early. Imagine now you get the Final Four, you can't even go there. What if Jared Butler's parents wanted to go there? Can't do it. This is stupid. I've never seen one like this. If you haven't subscribed to the Island College Basketball Podcast, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, and we will talk to you again late Monday after we crown a national champion, but not with an actual crown, and nobody's getting involved.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.